Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, May 9th, 2021. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you all had a great week, and happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there and anyone who has a pet or anything out there. All mothers, thank you very much for everything that y'all do. I actually just spent some time with my family, spent some time with my stepmom today, so happy Mother's Day to Lori once again. And, you know, my mother passed away when I was younger, so want to dedicate this episode to her, to Penny Jensen. It's 19 years this month that she passed away, so always thinking about her and dedicating the show to my mom today, as well as my stepmother, Lori, and all of the mothers out there that are listening. So, let's talk about the topics for today and then jump right into it. On today's episode of The Weekender, we have results for Impact Wrestling. I've got two results, 2 weeks worth of MLW Fusion, because I completely spaced last week. I had it on my list. I even talked about MLW throughout the show, but I forgot to just go through the actual Fusion card last week. So I'm going to go through that to make up for it, and then I'll talk about this week's results as well. We have results for 205 Live, NXT UK, Ring of Honor, AAW. I have a recap of the latest being the Elite episode titled Trick Shot. And before that, I have my recommended show to talk about on independentwrestling.tv. And usually, I keep these spoiler-free for my recommended shows, but there is going to be some big spoilers that I'm going to talk about, mainly from the main event. So I'm going to talk about basically the matches, and I'll highlight some talent like I always do, but I am going to be talking about the result of the main event for this show. So just a heads up, if you want the spoiler-free, I'd recommend just fast-forwarding a little bit, but the show that I have chosen is Beyond Wrestling's Project Reality. And the reason that I've chose it is because Beyond Wrestling is a great company and they have a lot of great talent on these shows. But on top of that, we had some big news coming out of the IWTV Championship match. So I'll talk about everything else, then we'll talk about that. So as far as the show itself, once again, the company is called Beyond Wrestling. They're one of the top independent companies out there. You know, I'd consider them right up there with, you know, pretty close to like GCW, something like that, as far as it's a company that a lot of names go through and have come from. A lot of people you see on television right now, I mean, like Chris Statlander, Orange Cassidy, Jonathan Gresham, you see over on, you know, Ring of Honor. I mean, there's so many people that go through Beyond Wrestling, and they're very, very important in the big landscape of independent professional wrestling. This show was called Project Reality, and it happened on the 6th of this month, so just 3 days ago at the time of this recording. These are the matches to expect. We've got Ted Goods taking on Chris Dickinson. Alec Price taking on Edith Surreal. We had Robo the Punjabi Lion taking on one called Manders. We had Pretty Proper, the team of Victor Benjamin and Lady Frost, taking on the team C-Stars, Ashley Vox and Delmi Exo. We had Cam Zagami taking on Matt Mikowski. And we also had Matt Mikowski taking on Richard Holiday. We had Solo Darling taking on Aaron Rourke. We had the Shook Crew in tag team action, Bobby Orlando and Bryce Donovan, against Rex Lawless and Mike Verna. We had Kimber Lee taking on Masha Slamovich. And in the main event, we had Lee Moriarty defending the IWTV Championship against Wheeler Yuta. So I'm going to highlight some of the talent here, and then we'll talk about this main event. So we had Chris Dickinson on the show. I talk about him very often. He's a guy who I really, really think, I mean, he's at the top of his game right now. He has all the tools. He's doing great stuff, you know, as a part of Ring of Honor now, which we'll talk more Ring of Honor later on in this show. There was some big news coming out of that one too, a big title change. But Dickinson's, he's the man. I mean, we see him at Bloodsport now. We see him really everywhere. And I feel like it's just any day now. I mean, I don't know what his situation is with Ring of Honor. For all I know, like, he has a contract with them. I really don't know. But I have to imagine he's a guy that we're going to be seeing more and more on, you know, mainstream pro wrestling television at some point in the near future. We had Manders on this show. I talk about him all the time, too. Very similar to Dickinson, just hasn't been on the scene as long and hasn't had really the kind of name value as Dickinson. Just not yet. That'll come with time. Steve Manders, a.k.a. One Called Manders, is a guy, you know, we see him in GCW quite a bit now. He pops up all over the place. He's become one of the main faces of Southern Underground Pro out of Nashville. So, you know, everyone, I would highly recommend everyone keep your eyes on Manders. and I talk about it all the time, but last year, like, my favorite independent wrestling match of the whole year was on a random action wrestling show out of Tyrone, Georgia, which is a company that I love. It wasn't random that I was watching action wrestling, but it's just random that of all the companies and all the matches last year, the one that really stands out most to me was Manders versus Graham Bell. And I really, really, really enjoyed that match last year. So, yeah, big shout out to Manders. We had Matt Mikowski doing double time on this one. Mikowski, talk about him a lot. He's a guy that, you know, he hasn't even really scratched the surface yet. And when he hits his prime, he's going to be very, very, very good. Like, I see him as kind of in this group. You know, we got Mikowski, got guys like Daniel Garcia out there who I think are fantastic. These kind of guys who remind me kind of like an Anthony Henry type wrestler. Mikowski is just very, very technically sound. I think he's going to be a very big deal in professional wrestling. Richard Holiday, you know, we see him popping up all over the place as well. Good looking dude. I mean, checks a lot of boxes as well. And he's another guy that I think could have a very, very bright future. Edith Surreal, been doing a lot of stuff lately. They've been all over the place. So shout out to Edith. I mean, a lot of great stuff here. Kimberly, we've been seeing her on Impact Wrestling quite a bit. She, you know, on Impact, she plays more second fiddle to Deonna Purrazzo, but out on the indies, you know, she still is one of the top, you know, independent females out there as far as like name value. And she consistently wrestles towards, you know, the top of the card, you know, the stuff that she's involved with. So, you know, Kimberly, good seeing her. And Masha Slamovich, somebody that we talk about sometimes on the Weekender, but I think we'll be hearing their name more and more. Beyond wrestling, it's interesting because they have a lot of talent that like is kind of, I don't know how to explain it. It's almost like they have some of their own talent. It feels like you see a lot of repeat people there. Like Dickinson is like always there. Janela used to always be there. David Starr used to always be there. Like, you know, say what you will about David Starr at the moment. I don't think we'll ever see him back in wrestling, but that being said, like he was, you know, the ace of Beyond Wrestling. There's a lot of, you know, they kind of have their own kind of people, and it's cool when you see some new blood kind of pop into Beyond Wrestling, because they're also one of these companies with like their signature series and stuff where they have a very big presence on independentwrestling.tv. So I really like what they do. I think they're a great promotion, and I think it's a really great kind of it's kind of like a good, almost like a developmental, almost as far as like, you can take someone straight from Beyond Wrestling right into AEW. You can take someone from Beyond Wrestling straight into NXT without them really needing to go to the Performance Center, if that makes sense. I'm sure that most of them would anyways, just because that's kind of how they do it. But I think y'all know what I mean with all this. So great stuff. So now let's talk about the main event. We had a big title change. Wheeler Yuta defeated Lee Moriarty to win the IWTV Championship. And this is very significant for a lot of reasons. One, shout out and hats off to Wheeler Yuta. That's a guy who's been out there grinding and doing good work. He is in the best shape of his life. I just did an interview with independent wrestler Cabana Man Dan that's going to be dropping on my Fight Talk podcast feed this week. And one of the things that we talked about actually was this title change and just how great of shape Wheeler has gotten himself into. And how he just keeps getting better and better. And man, it's really great to see. The first time I think became aware of him was through Dojo Pro, which was in Nashville. It was like a studio wrestling show that they eventually put out on Amazon Prime. And it was really good. I'd recommend it. There was a lot of people that you know, like Ricky Starks was in that, Jeff Cobb, James Storm, MJF. Wheeler Yuta, like I just mentioned here. I mean, there was a lot of great talent. Kevin Koo, I'm missing a ton of PA. Aaron Solo, I mean, the list goes on and on. There was a great group of talent there. And Wheeler Yuta, that's where I really discovered him. And since then, I mean, he's been one of these guys. I was talking about people that are kind of staples of Beyond Wrestling, like Chris Dickinson. Wheeler Yuta is one of those people. And we've been seeing him lately on Ring of Honor in the Pure Division. And you know, it's not just pure matches, but, you know, he's very versatile. He can do tag team stuff very well. He can do pure wrestling. He can do really any type of wrestling. And he's a great, great athletic talented guy, and he's still very young, and the sky's the limit for him. I'm a very big fan of Wheeler Yuta. And this match was also very significant because I'm a very big fan of Lee Moriarty. And this feud between the two, I think it carries, I know for sure it bleeds into the Masked Wrestler show. I don't know how many other promotions it kind of carried into, if any, but I know a lot of like the feud here was Wheeler Yuta and Lee Moriarty going back to the Masked Wrestler show. There was a tournament that Moriarty eventually won, and then that tournament win got him a shot at Warhorse when Warhorse was the IWTV champion. So when Moriarty beat Warhorse, it was because Moriarty had won the Masked Wrestler. So Wheeler was a part of that show, and the feud kind of goes all the way back to that series. Now, Yuta defeating Moriarty, once again, is very significant, because I've been kind of alluding to it on the show. If you've been listening week after week, I've been saying we have to enjoy Lee Moriarty while we can, because I don't know how long he's going to be around, because I know that there's interest in the quote-unquote next step. And this, to me, just seems like a very big sign of that, because Moriarty had just beat Warhorse just a few months ago, a couple months ago. Well, really wasn't very long. I think this was only his, like, maybe, like, third or something title defense of the belt. Like, I'm not sure, but he hasn't defended it probably more than a handful of times. And Warhorse's reign was, like, 500-something days straight. So, and most of the title reigns, like Eric Stevens had less than a day reign, and Chris Statlander had a pretty short reign. But for the most part, when you had, like, I can't remember how long Gresham's was, but Tracy Williams had it for quite a while. Orange Cassidy had it for quite a while. Obviously, like I said, Warhorse had it for quite a while. Usually, this championship, you know, they don't really hot potato it much. And so that's another thing that makes this kind of significant to me, is, like, would they... The way that I look at it is this. I feel like Lee Moriarty was used as a transitional champion to get the title belt over to Wheeler Yuta. Not that necessarily they didn't want Yuta to beat Warhorse, but I think... I can only speculate. I have to imagine this. And I have to imagine Moriarty wasn't initially going to be a transitional champion. But my assumption is that Lee beat Warhorse, and then over the collective weekend / IWTV Showcase of the Indies weekend, there was a lot of eyes on Moriarty. And because of the attention he was getting, I don't want to speculate or report or break news or anything like that, but it's very possible that Moriarty is signed somewhere or is in the process of signing somewhere. So now they had to get the belt off of him. And Wheeler Yuta was definitely the best option, in my opinion, given their history. And Wheeler Yuta wrestles a fairly similar style to Moriarty, and he can be a very similar type of champion. Like, the plans that they would have had for Moriarty with that title, I think they can basically execute the same exact way with Yuta. They're not the same exact people, obviously. They definitely have their differences, but at the core of it, they're both very good technical wrestlers, and I think that was the idea with this title belt, you know, in its immediate future. And once again, this is just speculating and guessing and just me as a fan from the outside looking in. That's just kind of how I feel about it. But Wheeler Yuta 1,000,000% deserved this. Like, I don't want this to even sound like, you know, he's only winning the title because Moriarty might be signed somewhere. I mean, I think Wheeler Yuta could have very well just won it anyways. He could have been the guy to beat Warhorse for it. And I don't think anybody would have had a problem with that. You know what I mean? Like, Wheeler Yuta is damn good, and he's only getting better, and it's great to see him in Ring of Honor, and it's great to see everything that he's doing, and he's a guy that, I mean, I have no doubt in my mind we'll be seeing him on AEW or, you know, NXT / WWE programming. I don't know in what time frame, but he's a can't-miss level talent. So, huge congratulations to Wheeler Yuta for becoming the new IWTV champion. And huge congratulations to Lee Moriarty on whatever's next, because, you know, and here's the thing. He might just go back, rematch Yuta, and become the IWTV champion again, and he's back out on the indies, and I'm totally wrong. But I just have a real hunch that we're going to be seeing Moriarty at that next level sooner than later. And he so deserves it. You know, I mean, geez, what a great talent that kid is. And he's another guy who's just going to keep getting better, and he's going to put on more size, and he's going to get even more athletic. And I mean, it's just, man, he'll get some real, if he does, I mean, imagine if you went to the PC. Now, personally speaking, I'm a much bigger AEW fan. I'd much rather see these guys wind up in AEW. But imagine, like, if the WWE knew what they were doing, and they could take a guy like Lee Moriarty and get him in that performance center at the point he's at right now, and just teach him a few things that could really put him over the top to make him a star, you know, a real star on that TV, on one of those TV shows. Like, I don't say this lightly. I really feel like Lee Moriarty, he's money. Like, this guy is going to draw. He's a good looking dude. He's young. His charisma, like the way he sells things, like facially while he's wrestling, and the way he puts these unique holds on people. He wrestles, the only person that's comparable to him is like Dana Makabe. He's the only other guy out there that I think is wrestling that type of style that checks all these boxes also. So it's like, man, Moriarty is in, he's in rare, really rare, I don't know. He's at a rare level. I don't even know how to put it. You know, Jonathan Gresham is another guy I'd put there with those guys. I mean, it's like in Tracy Williams, you know, there's maybe like 5 to 10 guys I would say are like in that group as far as like technical wrestlers that just, once again, can just be so money in the professional wrestling business at that quote unquote next level. So, I can't wait to see what's next for Lee Moriarty. And I think he's going to go on to become a huge star. But once again, he might just be on the indies for a while, and that'd be fine too, because I love watching what he's doing right now. And yeah, once again, big congratulations to Wheeler. You had a huge title win. Can't wait to see what he does with that championship. All right, moving on. We got Impact Wrestling results. As always, going to plug the Twitch. If you guys want to watch these shows with us on Twitch live, we do it every Thursday. It's myself, Joel Pearl. Every other week, we have Jeremy Lambert. He stops in, usually hangs out for a little while. And then we have a revolving third guest. So this past week, we had Justine. A couple weeks ago, we had Rob Wilkins. We've had Hannah Moore pop in. We've had a lot of great guests so far. I don't want to miss people. I wish I shouldn't have started going down that road. We've had Tim. We've had Spencer Love. I don't want to sit here and miss people and be a jerk, but we've had a lot of great guests. And you can join us every Thursday at twitch.tv/FightfulGaming. We put the Impact show on the screen, so we have permission to sit there and watch it with y'all. Our faces are up on the screen. It's kind of like Mystery Science Theater for wrestling, kind of. It's kind of really the only thing I can really compare it to, but... yeah, so we watched the show on Thursday, and once again, please join us over there every Thursday night. And I'm going to tell you the results of the show and kind of what I think going forward for these stories here, because the big thing going on right now is obviously people qualifying to get into the 6-person match that's going to determine the next challenger to Kenny Omega and the Impact title. So one of those matches kicked the show off. We had Chris Sabin defeating Rhino. So he advances to the Under Siege 6-way match that I was just talking about. Got the win with a cradle for the 1-2-3. I'm fine with this. I think Sabin is, for the match that they're putting together at Under Siege, I think Sabin fits in with that group much better than Rhino would. I like Rhino, though. Like, I do not mind seeing him on Impact Television. He seems to move around and look pretty much the same he always has. And I don't mean that in a bad way. You know, if they overexposed it and did it like two, you know, over and over and over again, he was out there every week doing the same thing every single week, that might be one thing. But if he's only wrestling matches every 2-3 weeks or whatever, like, I think Rhino's still doing enough to deserve his spot with Impact. And I really like him with Violent by Design. Like, I like that he's just involved in something and he fits really well with that group. So, you know, Rhino out there doing his thing, but I think that Chris Sabin winning that match, that just makes more sense. And Sabin's kind of in this weird limbo too, where you know, Alex Shelley isn't back, and so he's kind of doing his own thing and kind of also tagging with James Storm and stuff. So this gives him something to do and something to work towards, and he'll be a part of what I think will be a really good match, and I think he'll contribute quite a bit to that match. You know, I think Chris Sabin's still got a lot in the tank. I don't know why I keep calling him Staben today. Chris Sabin's still got a lot in the tank. After that, we had Taylor Wilde defeating Susan. Got the win with a suplex for the 1-2-3. One of the running gags when we watch the show on Thursdays is Susan's gimmick is to lose. So seeing this wasn't surprising. Taylor Wilde just came back. She's getting built up towards a title match, and it'll probably be at Slammiversary if I had to guess. But you know, no surprises here. This is like literally exactly what you would expect out of it. And it's actually great that Susan has this gimmick, because seeing her lose to Susan over and over, like, that's great, because then Su Yung isn't taking L's. And then when Su Yung wrestles occasionally, it's a special thing, and they do better to protect her. So, you know, it is what it is, and Taylor Wilde winning makes total sense. If it was Taylor Wilde coming in and just, you know, beating Su Yung, then it'd be like, oh, damn, I don't know what this really does for either of them. Her coming in and beating Susan, it accomplishes exactly what it's supposed to. After that, we had Trey Miguel defeating Rahit Raju to qualify into the six-way at Under Siege. He got the win with a knee bar, which I liked a lot. The way that he got into it was pretty cool. It was like a midair reversal into the knee bar. It looked really good. Raju is very, very talented. I'm a big fan of his, and I like his pairing with Shira a lot. Trey Miguel, I don't know if he's listening to the show. I know the dude follows me on Twitter. I don't know if he's been listening, but I have not seen him doing the Meteora for a minute, at least not as a finishing move. And hey, I'm not going to take credit for that. I'm just going to say that I like that I'm seeing this change. He did the diamond cutter through the table to beat Sami Callihan at Rebellion, and he's using this knee bar now to get wins. I like it. I don't think he needs... I'm not a fan of the Meteora at all, but if he wants to use the move, I think that's fine in his moveset, but I like that he's changed up his finish, at least the last few weeks, so love seeing that. And I'm a big fan of you, Trey, if you happen to be listening to this. Very big fan of you and all the other MSK guys, which, you know, I consider you a part of them as well. I will always consider Trey Miguel to be a part of the Rascals. And, you know, fun fact for a lot of people who don't know, Myron Reed was actually a part of that group as well, like really early on. A lot of people don't know that. After that, we had Doc Gallows defeating Juice Robinson. There wasn't really much to this match, if I'm being honest. He got the win with a sit-out powerbomb. I'm not the biggest fan of Gallows really wrestling singles matches. He's not terrible. He just doesn't do a whole lot for me. And I honestly feel kind of the same way about Juice. I think Juice is more entertaining, but, you know, this just was what it was. It was all set up to set up David Finlay versus Carl Anderson next week. So this is just continuing the feud between the Good Brothers and Finjuice, which I was hoping would have been over at Rebellion, but it seems like it's going to drag on, because, I mean, at the end of the day, you feel like the Good Brothers have to win these titles back from them, but I think we all thought that at Rebellion too, so we'll see. After the match, it's worth bringing up too that Eddie Edwards tried to help out Juice and Finlay because the Good Brothers were beating him down. And that's all, you know, because Eddie Edwards is, you know, teaming with Finjuice against the Good Brothers and Kenny. After that, we had El Fantasmo, ELP, making his debut on Impact Wrestling against another person who is making his debut, VSK. VSK, I actually called this. We were talking about it during the show, because on Twitter, VSK had tweeted a picture. It looked like a promo pic he had taken for Impact Wrestling. And my immediate thing that went through my head was, okay, well, Fantasmo is debuting tonight. I bet VSK is coming in to do the job and make him look good. That's exactly what we got. Phantasmo with the win after a super kick, 1-2-3. No problems there. It was it served its purpose. It was meant to, it was meant to highlight ELP. That was the whole point of it, and it accomplished what it needed to. So, looking forward to seeing El Phantasmo on, hopefully more of a regular basis in Impact going forward, because he can create some buzz for them. He's gonna have some really good matches for them. Can do some really interesting stuff. So, and it can increase just the knowledge about him in the United States, because I know he's well known in Canada. He's well known in Japan. You know, the places that he's wrestled or that he's from. But like, I still feel like a lot of the American audience still might not really know much about him. So it's really good. It's really good to see that we're going to have a chance to see more of him, hopefully, in Impact Wrestling. After that, we had Rachel Ellering defeating Kiera Hogan, got the win with the, I can't remember what she hit her with. It was like a, it's totally escaping me. It was a slam. I just can't remember what type of slam. Ellering did hit a really nice black hole slam right before that, though. I do remember that because we were talking about Abyss during the show. But, so she had a really good black hole slam. Then her finish, I can't remember. Someone in the comments, I'm sure, will know. And I unfortunately don't have like the replay of the show right in front of me, or else I'd just watch it to remind myself. But regardless, Rachel Ellering looked very impressive. She looks very physically impressive. She looks very impressive in the ring. She looks very believable. She looks like she can go out there and kick ass. I like seeing all that. They're also talking about, I think they also set up Tasha Steelz and Jordan Grace, I think, for next week also. And very, very similar to the men's division, where we have the Good Brothers and Finjuice. We have Ellering, Grace, and Fire and Flava basically doing the same exact thing as well. A lot of good talent, though, on the knockout side. Like, and also, huge shout-out to Jordan Grace. It was recently reported that she's extended her contract or signed a new contract, whatever you want to call it, with Impact Wrestling. And good for her. I did not expect that to happen. I really thought that she would head to, like, I think she would have been a huge asset for AEW, a huge get for them, but I really thought that, like, if she went to WWE, they would have a lot of really cool plans for her, because she presents something different than the women they currently have, and she could have done such great stuff against the top women over in the WWE and over in NXT, but she stayed with Impact, and good for Impact, because the thing about that is, if you're with Impact, you're also technically, there's a good chance you could also be with AEW. You know what I mean? So, or any of these other quote-unquote Forbidden Door companies. So, I would imagine that probably played a part in her choice, too, is like, she's staying with Impact. She's had a great run at Impact. They use her very well, as far as like the stories and stuff, and she's great in the ring. I glowingly speak about her often. I mean, she's one of my favorite women in the entire world of pro wrestling to watch. I just feel like she's kind of done everything she can with Impact, but if signing with Impact also opens the door for her to also work with AEW and also maybe work, who knows, MLW or, New Japan or something. I mean, who knows, right? I mean, the sky's really the limit. So good for Jordan Grace. After that, we had the main event of the show, which was really good, between two of the best people, I think, in Impact Wrestling. We had Moose defeating James Storm to qualify for the Under Siege 6-way. Got the one with the spear for the 1-2-3. I mean, the only downside to this at all was that these are two guys, like, I would have liked to see either of them, I'd like to see both of them in the 6-man, is what I meant to say. Like, I'd like to see both of them in that 6-man to choose or to decide who's going to be the next contender. So to get this in the eliminator, that's the only downside to this. But I thought that this was the first round match that on paper looked like it was the biggest deal. And I thought it delivered. I thought it was a really good match. Moose winning is the right call. As much as I love James Storm, and he's one of my favorite guys to ever wrestle for Impact/TNA, Moose is the guy right now. I know I sound like a broken record, but he's the guy. Like, I really think if anybody from Impact is going to beat Kenny Omega, not necessarily, like, I don't know what the timelines are looking like, but I don't know if it's a month from now. I don't know if it's 6 months from now. I don't know if it's next year, whatever. if Moose is under contract to Impact Wrestling, he's the guy I think that should beat Kenny. He's the one on that roster that I think is the most credible, that would have the most interesting type of match with him. Not necessarily like the best match, right? Because they're, you know, like Kenny and Swan on paper, I think is a better matchup, but a completely different type of match with Kenny Omega and Moose. The power of Moose and the athleticism of Moose and in the size of Moose. Like, can Kenny do all the moves he would normally be able to do because Moose is so big and stuff? You know, there's a totally different story you can tell between Moose and Kenny Omega. And Moose could really be the savior of the company by getting those titles back. And he's the one who's been built up the most. He's the one that I just really think if you have to pick one person on their roster to beat Kenny Omega and get that belt back to Impact, I don't know, once again, I don't know when you do it, but Moose would hands down be my choice to be that guy right now. And after the match, Moose attacks James Storm, and he wraps a chair around his leg and stomps on it. And Chris Sabin comes out to check on James Storm afterwards. But, you know, basically they're just continuing to establish Moose as just this heel with, like, really no redeeming qualities. And in all honesty, I would slow burn a babyface turn for Moose. I really would, especially if he is the one to win it under Siege. Now, I don't know who's going to win that match at Under Siege. I'm just assuming it's going to be Moose for all the reasons I've just given. But we'll see who it winds up being. But if it is Moose, I think it would be much smarter to have him establish as a babyface going in there, if he's going to wrestle Kenny Omega for that belt. So that was Impact Wrestling. Up next, we have 2 weeks' worth of MLW results. So last week on the 28th, we had Ross Von Erich defeating Dominic Guarini. Got the win with a counter into a pin for the 1-2-3. And after the match, the Von Erichs and Violence's Forever, they almost start fighting. And I love that feud. I think it would do a world of good for VIF, Violence's Forever, the team of Ku and Guarini. I think that if Ku and Guarini could beat the Von Erichs, it would do a world of good for that tag team. The Von Erichs are a great team. I like them a lot. But, like, we've seen it. We've been there. We've done that. Ku and Guarini present something different. They're younger. They're fresh. As far as, you know, a lot of people on the indies know them. But, like, as far as mainstream TV, they're guys we haven't seen on AEW or WWE or really, you know, really hardly anywhere. MLW is really the biggest place that we've seen Dominic Guarini and Kevin Ku. And they have a chance to really establish them as like a quote-unquote homegrown team. And they're also very good singles wrestlers. I like them both as singles, but I like them even better as tag team. So, you know, I'm just hoping that eventually VIF beats the Von Erichs. I don't know if that's what's going to happen. I know the Von Erichs have a great spot in MLW, and they are very good. Like, this is nothing against the Von Erichs. It's just I'm very pro VIF and seeing them get MLW really, really push them and give them a real chance. After that, we had Boku Dao defeating Io del LA Park. LA Park. Got the win with that diving flatliner he does, where he jumps off the second rope and does that spinning flatliner for the 1-2-3. No problems with this one at all. Boku Dao, I think he's got a bright future in MLW. They seem to be really behind him. Him getting that win over TJP last week or the week before in the main event, that showed me a lot there. So, yeah, good to see Dao. You know, I want to see him continue to get that little push he's getting. After that, we had the main event where Filthy Tom Lawler defeated Marshall Von Erich. Got the win when it was a really nice submission. It was like a knee bar / ankle lock. And it looked brutal. And also Tom Lawler, just for the record, if I don't know if y'all follow at all, but Tom Lawler actually still competes in MMA, and he lost his fight, I think it was like a week ago. He lost in PFL, but just wanted to throw that out there. It's pretty wild that he still is actively competing in mixed martial arts while also doing so much pro wrestling. But once again, this kind of continues what I was talking about at the beginning of the show, because I was talking about VIF versus the Von Erichs. Well, of course, VIF, of course, associated with Filthy Tom Lawler as Team Filthy, and Lawler gets the win over Marshall Von Erich to end the show. And after the match, Team Filthy beats up the Von Erichs, and then ACH comes out to make the save. So really good stuff there. And then this week on MLW, we had... sorry, just getting it pulled up here. We had to start off with Laredo Kid defeating Gringo Loco. I really like this match. I like both these guys a lot. Like, Laredo Kid has been around for, I mean, at least 10 years. I feel like at least 10 years. Maybe even longer. And Gringo Loco, I've talked about quite a bit on this show. A dude that, like, when you see him, like, you don't really know what to expect. And then he wrestles, and you're like, wow, I really didn't expect that. Very entertaining guy and very different. Does his own thing. And Laredo Kid got the one with the Spanish Fly for the 1-2-3. I liked it a lot. You know, I like seeing the Spanish Fly as a finishing move. It's similar to like the Canadian Destroyer, a move that should be a finisher every time it's hit, but we've seen it so often that it just usually isn't. I like seeing Laredo Kid use that as a finish. And once again, I like seeing Gringo Loco just on MLW at all. After that, we had Richard Holiday defeating Ariel Dominguez. Got the win with the 2008, his finisher, for the 1-2-3. Holiday, I was just talking about before, you know, for wrestling with Beyond. He's a guy that you can really tell MLW has a lot invested in. And, you know, he's a good-looking dude. His gimmick is basically, like, a coffee connoisseur, basically, at this point. But... you know, if he develops more of like a character that people can really get behind, he's the kind of guy that I think would do really well. Like, he'd be presented really well on like a mainstream TV. We see it with MLW, you know, and I think he does great stuff there. It's just, I think, you know, the more he develops and the more he gets maybe a more interesting character, the more that I think the wrestling world will be talking about him. But he has a lot of time. He hasn't even hit his prime yet. And after that, in the main event, a really, really good match, in my opinion. We had Myron Reed defeating Leo Rush to become the two-time MLW World Middleweight Champion. Got the win with his splash off the top for the 1-2-3. Really, really good stuff. Hot fire, Myron Reed. Man, he's come a long way. The first time I saw him was in Glory Pro Wrestling out of St. Louis area years back. And he just keeps getting better. I love his teaming with Jordan Oliver and Calvin Tankman. And yeah, I just, the whole Injustice thing. And I think Reed's been cutting really good promos lately. And he's a guy, I know I've said this before, but it rings even truer today because of the next set of results that I'm about to read. But, you know, there's guys out there like Alex Zane, like Ben Carter, like Blake Christian that have all recently been signed to the WWE. And I feel like Myron Reed he's like, right there. You know what I mean? He's so close to just like being right there with those guys if he isn't already. I think Myron is a guy who is going to be a very big star in professional wrestling, and I would not be surprised at all to see him signed to a major company at some point in the near future. I think he's doing great with MLW. I have no idea what his MLW contract looks like. Don't know how long he's locked in there for. And hell, I don't know if he might just stay for a long time. I mean, they really have him figured into a lot of their big plans. I mean, Myron Reed is consistently a focal point of the show. Him, Oliver, and Tankman are the three of those guys, I think, are money together. And they're, they could really be kind of one of the backbone groups of all of MLW right now. And it was great to see Oliver and Tankman celebrating with Myron Reed after the match, too. And then at the end of the show, in a twist that, like, really, it's like one of those, like, if you know, you know type things. Afterwards, we find out El Jefe is Dario Cueto. Dario Cueto, I'm so bad with his name. Dario Cueto from Lucha Underground, which is like, he was the dude who, you know, ran Lucha Underground. And I loved Lucha Underground when it was around. I watched it through the first, I think, definitely the first two seasons. I stopped watching around the time that I think like Jack Swagger had maybe debuted right around the time I stopped watching it, but I was thoroughly entertained by Lucha Underground for, you know, a few seasons there. And Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because they're clearly doing Lucha Underground, because like the like where they were when they shot this, like it was all Lucha Underground themed. Like, I mean, and of course you have Mil Muertes, you know, as a part of the show already. I mean, I think a Lucha Underground kind of, I don't know if invasion's the right word, but of like a Lucha Underground presence on MLW, that could be really damn interesting. So I'm very, very, very intrigued to see where this all goes. But yeah, shout out to Dario Cueto for it's wild that this is actually where they're going with this stuff. So very cool to see. Up next, we got 205 Live. Started off with someone I just talked about, Alex Zane. His new name is Ari Sterling. That'll take a while to get used to. I don't necessarily love the name. I knew that they would change his last name. I knew he wouldn't be Alex Zane. They have a Sami Zayn already. The spelling was different, but it was close enough, and it sounds identical. So, like, I was not surprised to see Alex Zane get a name change. I just don't. I mean, Ari Sterling seems pretty generic, but who knows? It's more about his in-ring than his name, anyways, right? He wrestled Samir Singh of the Bollywood Boys in his debut for the promotion here. And it was a showcase match for Sterling. He looked really good. He had a sick it was like a bottom rope springboard Fosbury flop to the outside at one point. Just awesome. Which, you know, this is the kind of stuff I expect. I once watched Alex Zane. I was in a bar inside Nashville, Tennessee, inside of a bar, and I was standing there right next to the ring and witnessed Alex Zane versus Craig Mitchell. At one point, Craig was holding a trash can. He's on the outside of the ring. He's holding a trash can. Alex Zane from inside the ring does like an Undertaker over the top rope dive, just clears the ropes, dives. Mitchell throws the trash can up, and Alex Zane lands head first in the trash can and just crashes to the floor. It was one of the nastiest bumps I have ever seen live, and I was like right there, the thud of him hitting the ground. Alex Zane is insane. And yeah, he can do some really damn cool stuff. Really puts his body on the line. The dude's nuts. He got the win with a move that I doubt will stick as his finisher. It was interesting. I appreciate that he went for it. It's something that I don't think has ever been seen on WWE TV. He basically, it's very hard to explain. He basically put Singh in a sidewalk slam, but then did a front flip. Like he did a front flip while holding him, and Singh like crashed face first into the mat for the 1-2-3. So innovative offense of Ari Sterling, and yeah, it's just great to see him finally as you know as a part of the show. And then the only other match we had was another debut for 205 Live, Ikemen Jiro, who teamed with August Gray to defeat Tony Nese and Ari Daivari. Ikemen is translation for handsome, and he's a Japanese man, if you couldn't tell by the name. But he comes out and he's wearing like a suit jacket with his own face all over it. And like this very upbeat music, and he's always giving like these thumbs ups and stuff. He comes from Wrestle One. He was there for years, but I don't know much about him to be completely honest. And he definitely has a lot of charisma. And I thought he looked really good in this match. I thought Alex Gray looked good as he always did. And I think Tony Nese and Daivari continue to play the roles that they need to perfection. They are the gatekeepers of this brand right now. And they are being used to elevate the next generation of these guys. Accomplish exactly what it needed to. The finish came when Jiro hit a it was like it was almost it was like a it was basically an enziguri. Like he did a running enziguri basically. And like it looked nice. Looked pretty generic though. Like it's a move that I think like at this point most pro wrestlers just do during their matches. I feel like we see flying kicks all the time. But yeah, they'll figure that out. It's nothing compared to the finishers that August Gray uses. But yeah, Jiro with the win. And he created a lot of buzz for himself, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of him, because once again, you know, it's pretty rare that somebody pops up on 205 Live and I don't know, and like I don't really know much about them after, like I the most that I really knew of him was Wrestle One, and I knew he had been signed to the Performance Center sometime in like the last year or so, because I remember when he signed. But since then, I mean, this is really the first real look I've gotten on him, and I mean, he did what he needed to do out there. So I am looking forward to seeing, you know, the future there for him, and of course for Ari Sterling. So two very big debuts for 205 Live. Up next, we had NXT UK. Show started off with Dragunov and Mastiff. There was no finish in this one because Mastiff seemed to hurt himself. He fell during, like, towards the beginning of the match, and the referee threw the X up. So I hope Dave's okay. I don't know if it's a work or a shoot. I haven't looked into it, to be fully honest, but I'm assuming it's legitimate, because I don't know why else they would have done this. But Dragunov, you know, I know I say this kind of often too, but it's literally like you have Walter as the champion, and then right underneath him you have Ilya Dragunov. Like he's like, if Walter wasn't there, Dragunov would probably be that like long-term, long-time champion. Him or Rampage Brown. I think they're, and I love Tyler Bate being there too still. And so they have so much talent still with 205 Live, with NXT UK. But Dragunov, I really feel like is the one probably with the most upside of everyone too, if I'm being honest, as far as like long-term within the WWE umbrella. If they knew how to book him and they got him in the right stories and the right matches on like SmackDown, for instance, I think Dragunov could be, he could be a star. And I think Walter could too, but I just think he's served best in the role that he's currently in, just being the monster, undefeated, unbeatable champion. But I don't think he would be that guy on Raw or SmackDown. So I think NXT UK is kind of, I hate to say it, I think it's kind of the peak of what we're going to see from Walter. So I think they should just do this as much, as long as they possibly can with him. Because once again, if he were to show up on Raw or SmackDown, I feel like, you know, Braun Strowman, like one match and the lust of, or whatever you want to call it, the honeymoon phase of Walter being on Raw or SmackDown or whatever would be just squashed in one, you know, 3-minute match against Braun Strowman or something. After that, we had Trent Seven defeating Saxon Huxley, got the win with the 7-star lariat for the 1-2-3. I like seeing it. I like seeing they're still doing something with Trent Seven. You know, he's just kind of spinning his wheels at the moment, but he is a great member of that brand. I just don't know what more he has left to accomplish. And he's another guy that I don't think would be a huge deal on Raw or SmackDown. Maybe if they used him more on 205 Live, or they used him more, you know, on NXT or something. But I mean, or maybe he's just going to be an NXT UK lifer, which is totally fine too. He's probably in his comfort zone there also. And he definitely has to be helping out that next generation of guys. He's a real veteran on that brand. We also found out that Noam Dar is going to be taking on Nathan Frazer for the Heritage Cup. So, in a Heritage Cup rules match, A-Kid, the Heritage Cup champion. But I'd assume that the winner of Frazer and Dar will probably be in line for a shot at A-Kid's Heritage Cup. So I think that'll be really damn good. It'll be interesting to see Frazer in that element. And we already have seen a lot of Dar, so like personally, I want to see Frazer, you know, get that win, and I think that is what will happen, so we'll see next week. And in the main event, we had a Loser Leaves NXT UK match, where Kenny Williams defeated Amir Jordan, got the win after throwing Amir Jordan into, like, face first into a chair, got hit with a chair a few times, and Amir Jordan is out of NXT UK. So the former partners have now settled the score, and we'll see where each goes from here. But Kenny Williams with the win over Amir Jordan, it would have been fine with me either way. I can't even assume. I don't know what'll be next for Amir Jordan. I don't know if they'll stick to this or if it'll, you know, just be the part of a longer story. But it'd be cool to see Amir Jordan pop up somewhere else. I mean, we'll see. But, you know, NXT UK, solid show. And I'm very much looking forward to Dar versus Frazier next week. Up next, we have ROH results. So, this was a really good show, by the way. Highly recommend this one. We had Flamita defeating Bandido in the opener. The finish, I'm going to try to explain it the best I can, but basically, Bandido looked like he was about to get the win. And he had Flamita up in the... It's like the go to sleep that he does, but they're up in more of like a burning hammer position instead of more of like a attitude adjustment position, if that makes sense. And when he put Flamita up for it, Flamita's leg hit referee Todd Sinclair, and because Sinclair was knocked over, or you know rubbing his head, I can't remember exactly how it went down. He knocked him over, but when Sinclair went down because of the kick, Flamita with an immediate low blow to Bandido, and then he literally pinned him by just like putting his foot on his face. So total disrespect. And you know, these former longtime friends, I mean, this has been quite the rivalry that I have a hunch will continue because of what we've been seeing between the two. So Flamita with the win over Bandido in what I thought was a very entertaining match. After that, we had Matt Taven and Mike Bennett defeating Beer City Bruiser and Ken Dixon. This was solid too. I mean, I really think that I think that Mike Bennett is doing some of the best work he has. I really do. I think he's getting a whole new life right now, you know, within the context of, you know, professional wrestling. And Bennett being back in Ring of Honor is probably the best thing that could have happened for Matt Taven, because Taven was at a point where like he won the title, and in my honest opinion, he was probably the least entertaining Ring of Honor champion that I can ever remember. And it's nothing against Taven, it's just I just didn't think the title reign was good, and the matches weren't like great always, and it just wasn't for me. And I never wanted to see Taven really in that spot again. But now with, you know, the OG Kingdom, you have him, it's kind of like he gets new life too within Ring of Honor. And these two are going to be getting a tag team title match soon against Tracy Williams and Rhett Titus. So, all good stuff. Good finish, too. It was a package. Basically, Bennett did a package stunner while Taven did like a running sick kick to the head. It was a nice double team. So yeah, good stuff. Once again, Bennett and Taven, this is really the best thing that could have probably happened for either of them at this point in their careers right now. So, good stuff. Looking forward to their tag team title match. And then the last match we had was... Oh, sorry, I forgot to mention that Brian Melanis attacked Dixon, and the Beer City Bruiser and Brian Melanis are the together as the bouncers again. So I didn't want to miss that. And the main event of the show, in a really, really, really good match with a really good finish, in my opinion... We had Tony Deppen defeating Tracy Williams to win the Ring of Honor Television Championship. And what I have to consider, I think in Ring of Honor, you know, it's considered a very big upset. The commentators put it over like it was a big upset. If you've been watching, you know, the indies for a while, like, it really doesn't seem like that far-fetched, because we know how great Tony Deppen is, and of course, we know how great Hot Sauce is. But I like this a lot. I mean, they made Tony Deppen seem very resilient, which is something he needs. A guy kind of his stature, the more believable he can be as a guy who just doesn't give up, and a guy who's just really, he's a really, really tough out. He might not win every match, but he's going to damn sure make you earn that win. And I think that this was really well done. I mean, Tracy Williams, towards the end of the match, he hits his pile driver, which Tracy's got one of the best pile drivers in the business, in my opinion. And then Deppen got his foot on the rope, and basically, like, they're fighting for kind of for position, and I'm not going to be able to articulate exactly, I'm not going to be able to paint you the best picture. I don't know if you know what a spladle is in wrestling, but it's like a leg trap pin, and the way that Deppen got into it, he, like, trapped Williams' arm and did a front roll right into the spladle. Like, it was really, really nice, and it was a pin I don't know if I've ever really seen in pro wrestling before, to be honest. So Deppen wins the TV championship really good stuff. I did not expect, I mean, I expected it because I knew that he was going to win going into the show. But as far as, like, when I read that he had won the match, I was like, damn, good for him. You know, I love seeing them doing something with Tony Deppen and him being in that group with Homicide, Dickinson, those guys. Like, I mean, that's going to be, that's a good spot for him to be in right now. So really good stuff. Really good stuff. Congratulations to Tony Deppen, a guy who has been one of the unsung heroes of, I shouldn't say unsung, he's very well known, but kind of an underappreciated, in my opinion, member of independent professional wrestling for the amount of incredible matches I've seen him have against so many different people. Moving on, we have AAW results. I'm just going to run through these real quick to just throw them out there for y'all. Definitely check out AEW, though. They put on great shows. This last one was from Fight TV, and it was called Take No Prisoners. We had Jake Something over Alex Rico and Rico de la Vega. We had Hakeem Zayn, also known as Rahit Raju on Impact, over Dante Leon. Dante Leon, if you don't know about him, get educated. He is such a fun high flyer, and I really became more and more aware of him over the Collective weekend this year, but he's another one of those guys. I think he's going to create a lot of buzz for himself. Very entertaining. We had Allison Kay defeating Sky Blue. Really good matchup there. ACH over Davey Vega. Really good there as well. I always like Davey Vega. His Besties in the World tag team is one of my favorite teams, but him as singles, you know, always delivers as well. The AEW Heritage Championship, Myron Reed defeated Matt Fitchett, who is the other half of the Besties in the World. I just talked about his partner, Davey Vega. I'd say the same thing about Matt Fitchett, like seeing both those guys doing their own thing, but like them even more as a tag team. We had Shaft defeating Damian Chambers and Jason Page. We had the SGC, the second gear crew of Manders and Matthew Justice, defeating the team of Dion Russman and Joessa. We had Leo Rush defeating Laredo Kid. We had the AEW Tag Team Championships on the line, where Madman Fulton and Ace Austin defeated the team of Gringo Loco and Trey Miguel. And in the main event of the show, we had Mance Warner retaining the AEW Heavyweight Championship over Fred Yehi in what was a great match. It was incredibly bloody. Yehi, a man who is very known for his technical skill. He's a guy whose name I actually missed at the top of the show when I was talking about Moriarty, Makabe, Gresham, Tracy Williams, those guys that I consider like the best technical wrestlers in the world right now. Fred Yehi is in that group. He's with those guys for sure. And him having this bloody war with Mance Warner was really cool to see, just the stylistic differences between the two. The two are just like completely different wrestlers for like every reason, but they mesh very well because they are so damn talented. Mance Warner, I've been saying for a long time, like, it wouldn't surprise me if we hear at any point that he's, you know, heading to AEW or WWE or something, because he's been right on that brink for so long now. And Yehi we're getting to see more of in Ring of Honor lately, which I think is awesome because he fits that pure division like a glove. But good stuff. A lot of great talent on these AEW shows. So I just wanted to give them a shout out, give those results out for y'all, and encourage you to check the company out. Once again, that's AAW. It's available on Fight TV. Check it out. And lastly, we have a recap of the latest Being the Elite episode titled Trick Shot, which I have my notes for, but I watched it a few nights ago, so I'm going to do my best to kind of remember how I was feeling when I watched this show, because I do remember as I was watching it being like, ugh, this is another bad one. I kind of wish I didn't have to spend my time watching this week, but we're doing it because I'm doing it for y'all, so... The show starts off with the Young Bucks. They're basically bragging about how awesome their ring gear is, and they're showing off their shoes and their gear and all, or not gear, but their like their jackets and all their new clothes or whatever. And Brandon Cutler is taking action shots of them. Then we get footage of Nick Jackson trying to find a basketball that he lost, a mini basketball. I don't know what you call it. I have one from Dave and Buster's. They're like the little cheap plastic basketball hoops that come with a little cheap ball. There was footage of Nick Jackson trying to find the ball that he lost up in the ceiling, and they couldn't find it. After that, we have another photo shoot of the Young Bucks, and they're complaining about how hot it is in Jacksonville, Florida and stuff, and yeah, they're just being arrogant and bragging about their clothes and taking pictures and stuff. Just more of the same. After that, we had a Dark Order segment where basically, I mean, I really don't know how else to put it. It's like the majority of the conversation was like Five talking about finally losing his virginity, and but like he's saying that he lost his virginity to 10, but then like the other members are like getting jealous that like 10 is, it, I mean, there's no other way you can put it. It's basically like the Dark Order are like just, they just all become like gay with each other, and like they're all like, it's like, it's funny, but it's like, it's, I don't know what to think of it at this point, because it's just like, okay, like they're all talking about having sex with each other now, basically. But like Grayson is clearly into Anna Jay, but like also seems, I guess he's like bisexual and not sure. I don't know. One of the funny lines here was how 10 talked about how he had used all of his needles earlier in the day. I can't remember why they brought needles up, but I remember them talking about that, because the joke there is that 10's so jacked that he, you know, he's shooting steroids and stuff. It's and the reason I even bring up like the gay thing with the Dark Order, right, is because I can bring that up. I can bring up the steroid thing. I can bring up the 10 doing cocaine all the time thing. So much of this stuff on being the elite, it just has nothing to do with what you see on Dynamite. And it's like, it's almost to the point of like complete confusion for me, because if like Dark Order was all like gay with each other on Dynamite, then like I'd understand it more. But it's like they only act like that on being the elite. But then, like, on the show, they're supposed to, like, they're comedy, but, like, they're not, they don't really go there on the show. And I wish it was just consistent. Like, you know, like, 10 is constantly, I know that they don't want 10 doing drugs on Dynamite, but it's like, his whole gimmick on being the elite is that he's addicted to coke. But it's never even, like, remotely brought up at all on Dynamite. Once again, I get why they wouldn't do that. I'm just saying it's just this weird inconsistency of like, who are these people? You know what I mean? What am I watching? What is the point of doing what I'm watching right now? You know? So I don't know. I mean, it's usually really funny, but I mean, at the end of the day, I guess the point of the segment was Tay Conti was sitting in the spot that Anna Jay normally does. And, you know, they start looking for John Silver. So that's pretty much it. And Hangman wasn't there, so it's worth mentioning that. And that's the other thing, too. Like, they're not all just gay with each other. Like, the ultimate prize for them is Hangman. Like, you know, but once again, you don't really get that on Dynamite. Like, you can tell they all admire Hangman on Dynamite, but, like, they aren't in love with Hangman on Dynamite. It's just this strange inconsistency. And it, once again, it isn't even just this stuff. Like, the Nyla Rose and Ryzen stuff that I'll talk about. Like, and Nyla Rose, Vicky Guerrero, and Ryzen. Like, I don't watch Dark, so I could be wrong. I don't watch it as often. But have they ever shown them as, like, the nuns doing this stuff on Dynamite? I don't think so. You know, it seems like it's, like, these two completely different worlds. But not always, right? Like, there's certain things where they're continuing to progress stories, and the Young Bucks are pretty much the same throughout and stuff, but, like, most of what I feel like I'm watching on Being the Elite is, like, them trying to be funny, but, like, there's no relation to the actual show on Wednesdays. And I feel like this whole thing should be about promoting their show on Wednesdays, and when you don't have enough time to do something on Wednesday's show, you have that extra time to put it on Being the Elite. I don't want to see two completely different characters, but it's the same people or the same person. You know, if any of that makes sense. It just feels like I'm watching just this weird bizarro world show every week. It just isn't very funny. Same here. We get Ryan Nemeth and, oh, we got some trick shots from Matt Jackson in his backyard. That was actually pretty funny, pretty entertaining. Best dad of all time, according to him. We had Ryan Nemeth and JD Drake. And JD Drake is, like, on the show, he's, like, this badass, like, throwback brawler fighter. But, like, on Being the Elite, he, like, can't get his little jacket on, and, like, Nemeth is being all cute about it, and so is Apple. It's, like, it's weird. It's, like, I don't want to see J.D. Drake looking like a fool. Like, I want to see him look like an ass-kicker. Like, that's what I want to see on the show. You know, it just doesn't seem to really help anybody by doing any of this stuff. After that, we had one. Here's another perfect example. The Good Brothers and the Elite are in a limo. And some of this carries over, but, like, the whole thing is about, like, how many times has the Good Brothers cummed or came, whatever the plural is. How many times have they jizzed throughout the day? And, like, everything is about dicks and jizzing. It's like, how many times are you going to listen to this? It's like the same lame jokes over and over and over again that just aren't helping. And the whole segment, just for what it's worth, was about how they don't want to do the too sweet hand gesture anymore. They want to do the E, like the E for the Elite. But even that turns into the Good Brothers trying to scissor their fingers together. It's like, oh, okay. And then after that, we had, oh yeah, and this made no sense. Like, Stu Grayson's, he's trying to find Brandon Cutler, and he thinks he sees Anna Jay walking down the hall, and he, like, runs up to her and puts his hand on her shoulder, and when she, quote-unquote, she turns around, it's Powerhouse Hobbs. And then Grayson runs away because he's scared of Powerhouse Hobbs. It's like, what? Okay. And then you have Nyla Rose and Ryzen, and they're talking to Cesar Bononi and Peter Avalon, and they're trying to get them to donate. And then basically they try to steal their phones and their wallets. Like, they scam them out of their stuff. And then Avalon is, like, saying that he got his stuff stolen in, like, a funny accent. He's like, they took my phone. It was, like, something like that. And it's, like, not funny again, okay? Like, and I don't think anybody cares about the Nyla Rose Ryzen and Vicky Guerrero non-stable thing that they're doing. And the Blue Chew and stuff. Once again, just not funny. And then after that, and really, like, the only real moment of the entire show, we have the Young Bucks backstage, and they're wearing their Adapt sneakers, which they, like, they pair to your phone, and they have lights and stuff, and they were worried that they weren't going to be able to get the lights to work the way they wanted to in time, and their laces wouldn't be tight enough because they're all connected to this phone, and, like, the show is starting, and, like, we get, like, an actual real moment of, like, the Young Bucks trying to, you know, get ready for their match, but, like, they don't know if their shoes are going to be ready in time and stuff, so it's like, that's cool. Like, I kind of like looking at that. And that was, like, an actual just real thing that happened, that they happened to film. It wasn't, like, them trying to be funny or being something that they aren't over and over and over again. Anyways, that's Being the Elite. The show actually ended with Nick Jackson hitting another really nice trick shot in his backyard. So there's a plus there. Yeah, anyway, another episode of Being the Elite. I feel like I wasted 15 minutes of my time watching the show this week. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Make sure to give me a follow on Twitter at @FightTalk_FightTalk_. And make sure to use code FightTalk on IWTV.live or independentwrestling.tv. I've been Steven Jensen. Until next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling. And happy Mother's Day.